Eggman, violating the sacred trust of the potentate of the global community is a capital offense, is it not, Mr. Moon?
Yes, sir, it is.
So, James, the next thing out of your mouth had better be the guilty party, or you will pay the ultimate price for the transgression. I'm waiting.
David could hear Hickman whimpering.
The name, Commander. If I hear that he is your friend, or that you'd rather not say, or anything other than who he is, you are a dead man.
Still, Hickman struggled.
You have 10 seconds, sir.
Hickman took a labored breath and coughed.
And now 5.
Mr. Moon, are you prepared to take Mr. Hickman into custody for the purpose of
Raymond Santiago,
Hickman blurted. But I beg of you, sir, don't Mr. Moon.
Please, no,
David heard Moon on his cell phone. Moon here. Listen, take Santiago into custody. Right, the one from peacekeeping, right now. Yes. Till I get there.
You let me handle it personally, Walter.
As you wish.
No, please.
James, when it is announced tomorrow that the peacekeeping deputy commander has been put to death, you at least will understand the gravity of the rules, won't you?
David heard assent through Hickman's sobs. Apparently that wasn't good enough for Carpathia.
Won't you, Supreme Commander?
Yes.
I thought so.
And, yes, I have need of a pig. A big, fat, juicy, huge-nostrilled beast so overfed that it will be too lethargic to throw me should I choose to ride it through the Via Dolorosa in the Holy City. Tell me, Hickman, tell me about my pig.
I haven't actually seen it yet, Hickman said miserably, but you understand my order.
Yes?
His voice was shaky.
Big, fat, and ugly.
Yeah.
I didn't hear you, James. Stinky, may I have him smelly?
Yeah,
whatever I want.
Yes.
Are you angry with me, my loyal servant?
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you for your honesty. Do you understand that I want an animal that could accommodate my fist in either nostril?
David jumped at the knock on his door. Mac and Abdullah had arrived. Chapter 15. Buck felt his age and was embarrassed to disembark in Kozani, Greece with a severe case of jet lag that didn't seem to bother the older Albie. And Albie, of course, had done all the flying.
Use it to your advantage, Albie said.
How so?
It should make you cranky.
I'm pretty even.
Well, quit that. You're just being polite. Your natural instinct when you'd rather be in bed is to be testy, short, irritable. Go with it. GC peacekeepers are macho, in charge. They have an attitude.
So I've noticed.
Don't ask, don't apologize. You're a busy man on assignment with things to do.
Got it.
Do you?
I think so.
That didn't sound so macho.
I've got to be that way with you, too?
At least practice, Buck. You Americans, I swear, I had to shame your father-in-law into being the leader he was born to be. You're an international journalist and you can't play act to get things done?
I think I can.
Well, show me. How did you get the big stories, get access to the best interview subjects?
I used the power of my position.
Exactly.
But I was working for Global Weekly.
More than that. You were Buck Williams, the Buck Williams of Global Weekly. It may have been your talent and your writing that made you the Buck Williams, but once you were him, you walked with confidence, didn't you?
I guess.
I guess, Albie mocked. Come on, Buck, you strutted.
You want me to strut?
I want you to get us a vehicle to drive to the detention center where Pastor Demeter and Mrs. Miklos and several others from their church are incarcerated.
But wouldn't it be easier for you?
Why?
You're the superior officer. You outrank everybody we'll run into.
Then take advantage of that. I'll be the one everybody sees but no one mentions. They will only salute. You speak with my authority. And you're wearing that beautiful uniform, tailored at Chez Zik.
I'll try.
You're hopeless.
I can do this.
You're not giving me confidence.
Watch me.
That's what I'm afraid of. I'll be watching you get found out. Prove me wrong, Buck. Out of my way, old man. That's the spirit.
You're going to have him refuel us while we're in Ptolemais?
No, Buck, you are. Come on, I don't know all that plane stuff. Just do it. From this point on, I am an angry, jet-lagged, ill-tempered deputy commander, and I don't want to speak.
So it's all on me?
Don't ask me, I'm mute.
Are you serious?
But Albie wouldn't answer. The twinkle faded from his eyes, and he set his jaw, scowling as they marched from the jet to the terminal, about 25 miles south of their destination. Buck accosted the first corporal he saw.
English? He asked the young man.
Course, sup.
I need you to hangar that aircraft and refuel it while my commanding officer and I are on assignment up the road.
Yeah? Well, I want you to shine my boots while I'm sleeping.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that, son.
Yeah, good. Me too.
He started to leave, and Buck swung him around with a grab of his shoulder.
Do it!
You think I know how to jockey a plane? I'm ground forces, pal. Get some other lackey to do it.
I'm telling you. Find someone who knows how to do it and have it done by the time we get back or suffer the consequences.
You gotta be kidding me.
Albie had kept his back to the conversation, and Buck was convinced he was trying not to laugh aloud.
You got that, son? Buck said.
I'm out of here. I'll take my chances. You don't even know my name.
Well, I do, Albie said, spinning to face the boy, suddenly ashen. And you'll do what you're told, or you'll be walking back to your hometown in civilian clothes.
Yes, sir, the boy said, saluting. Right away, sir.
Don't let me down, boy, Albie called after him.
Buck gave Albie a look.
Thought you were mute.
Somebody had to bail you out.
He was my own rank.
That's why you refer to me. I've got the clout, but you've got to use it. Try again.
What now?
I told you, we need a vehicle.
Ah.
Buck strode into the terminal, which was crawling with GC. With the crackdown on the underground churches, it would be a noisy area for a while.
Give me your papers, he told Albie.
What for?
Just do it. Hand them over.
Now you're talking.
Buck stepped to the front of a line of GC peacekeepers.
Hey,
the first in line shouted.
Hey yourself, Buck said. You a deputy commander, or are you escorting one? Because if you're not, I'd appreciate your standing down.
Yes, sir.
Buck raised an eyebrow at Albie, then spoke to the GC officer at a desk behind a window. Corporal Jack Jensen, on behalf of Deputy Commander Marcus Albaz, here on assignment from the USNA. Need a vehicle for transport to Ptolemais.
Yeah, you and 1,000 other guys, the officer said, lazily looking over their IDs. Seriously, you're about 200th in line.
Seems to me we're near the top, sir, begging your pardon.
How come your superior officer is USNA? He looks Middle Eastern.
I don't do the assigning, pal, and I wouldn't recommend getting into it with him.
No, better yet, it would be fun. Tell him he looks Middle Eastern and that you're questioning his base of operations. Go ahead, really.
The officer pursed his lips and slid the IDs back under the window.
Something basic, do you?
Anything. I could push for something fancy, but we just want to get in and get out. Anyway, tell you the truth, Albaz has been so touchy today, I don't think he deserves a nicer ride. We'll take whatever you got.
The officer slid Buck a set of keys attached to a manila ticket.
Show this at the temporary motor pool behind the exit gate.
As they headed that way, Albie mimicked Buck. He's been so touchy today, I don't think he deserves a nicer ride. I ought to bust you down to Boy Scout.
You do, and you'll be walking home in civilian clothes.
Carpathia's up to something, Max said, sitting next to Abdullah in David's office.
I am going to be so glad to say goodbye to this place, Abdullah said.
David shifted in his chair.
Tell me about it.
Well, don't you want to get out of here too?
I'm sorry, Smitty, David said. I was talking to Mac.
Oh, 1,000 pardons.
Watch him now, Mac said. He'll be pout in a new Babylon second.
I am not pout. Now stop teasing.
Mac smacked Abdullah on the shoulder and the Jordanian smiled.
Anyway, Mac said, turning back to David, Carpathia calls me a little while ago and asked me do I know where his weapons are. Of course I don't, but I'd sure like to. Tell you something, guys,
People can talk all they want about the miraculous rebuilding Carpathia did all over the world. But nothing, and I mean nothing, compares to him getting all those countries to destroy 90% of their weapons and give him the other 10, and then him storing them somewhere that nobody ever talks about.
Loose lips sink ships, David repeated.
You think people know but won't say?
Obviously.
How does he keep a secret that big among so many people?
I think I just heard how, David said, and he debriefed Mac and Abdullah on it. Abdullah sat, shaking his head.
Nikolai Carpathia is a bad man.
Mac looked at Abdullah and then at David.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on, Smitty, you just come to that conclusion, or have you known all along and just been keeping it from us?
I know you are teasing me, Abdullah said. Just wait until I know your language good.
You'll be dangerous, that's a fact.
David's cell phone rang. He flipped it open and held up an apologetic finger.
It's Ming, he said. Should we go? Max said.
David shook his head.
They were fighting over what you assumed they were fighting over, she said. My father wants Chang to take a job right away with the GC and be among the first to take the mark. Chang swears he will never take the mark.
Did he tell your father why?
No, and I am coming to see that he never can, unless my father himself somehow becomes a believer. I have not lost faith, and I keep praying. But until that happens, Chang cannot tell him. He would expose us.
Does your mother know?
No. She would eventually tell him. I'm afraid she is so intimidated that she would not be able to stand up to him in the end. David, you cannot let Chang get a job there, especially if new employees are the first to get the mark.
It appears that prisoners are going to be first, but yes, new employees soon. As they are hired, apparently, and even the rest of us within a couple of weeks.
What are you going to do, David? You and your friends?
We're talking about that now. Obviously, we run or we die.
Can you take Chang with you?
Kidnap him? Ming was silent.
Then, did you hear yourself, David? You want to leave him to take the mark or be beheaded for refusing, so you won't run the risk of kidnapping him? Please, kidnap him. For one thing, he will go willingly.
I'm supposed to interview him for a job tomorrow.
Then either find a way to eliminate him, discredit him as a potential employee, or tell him where to meet you when you escape.
The latter is more likely. What could possibly disqualify him? It looks like a gold mine to any department, especially mine.
Make something up. Say he has AIDS.
And let your father kill him himself?
Well, how about a genetic defect?
Does he have one?
No, but work with me.
I'm not a doctor, Ming. It would just stall things.
That's better than nothing.
Not if it makes me look suspicious. We're hoping to get out of here without their suspecting we were subversives.
Great idea. Tell them you want to take Chang with you to check him out before hiring. Then whatever happens to you happens to him. He's free and he can help you wherever you go.
Maybe.
It has to work, David. What choice is there?
What if they don't go for it? What if they say no, just hire him, give him the mark, and then take him on assignment?
You have to try. He's brilliant, but he's a child. He can't fend for himself. He can't even defend himself against my father.
I'll do the best I can, Ming.
That sounds like an excuse after everything fails.
I'm sorry, but I can't do better than the best I can do.
David, he's my brother. I know he's not your flesh, but can you pretend? If it was Annie, would you do your best, or would you do whatever you had to do to save her?
David couldn't speak.
Oh, David, forgive me. That was so wrong of me. Please, that was cruel.
No,
David, please blame that on my fear and my situation.
It's all right.
Please tell me you forgive me. I didn't mean that.
Ming, it's all right. You're right. I understand. You put it in perspective for me. Count on me. I will do whatever I have to do to protect Chang, all right?
David, do you accept my apology?
Of course.
Thank you. I'll be praying for you and loving you in the Lord.
When David rang off, Max said, "What in the world did she say, man? You look more like me than like an Israeli there for a second." David told him. "Tell you what," Max said, "and Smitty, you speak for yourself on this, but if that boy's a believer and he's got the mark to prove it, he's with us. And anybody else we can find before we get out of here, right, Smitty?"
"Right, I think. If I understand, other believers here all go with us. Yes, of course, right?
That's what we're saying."
"Mac, a question. Who else would speak for me?"
On the drive north, Buck used a secure phone to call Lucas Laszlos Miklos. The man was distraught.
Thank you for coming, but there is nothing you can do. Surely you did not bring weapons.
No.
You would be so hopelessly outnumbered anyway that you would never get out alive. So why the trip? What can you do?
I wanted to see it firsthand, Laszlos. Expose it to the world through the truth.
Well, forgive me, Brother Williams. I love your magazine, and I read it almost as religiously as Dr. Benjuda's messages. But you go to all the time and trouble and expense and danger to come all the way here, and it is for a magazine article? Did you know that the guillotines have arrived?
What?
It's true. I would pass it off as rumors myself if it weren't for the brothers and sisters who told me. The GC is carting them through town in open trucks so the people can see the consequences of thinking for themselves. We are part of the United Carpathian States, a name I have to spit when I say. Nikolai is going to make an example of us, and you are here to write an article.
Brother Miklos, hear me. You knew there was nothing we could do. We could make matters only worse if we tried to free your wife and pastor and fellow believers. But I thought you'd want to know we were here so we can tell you if we get in, what the conditions are, how their spirits are, whether they have any messages for you. Silence. Then Buck heard Laszlos weeping. Are you all right, my friend?
Yes, brother, I understand. Forgive me, I am upset. It is all over the television that the guillotines will be set up first in the prisons, then at the mark sites. It's just a matter of days for us now, but it could be just hours for the prisoners. Please tell my wife I love her and am praying for her and long to see her again. And tell her that if I don't see her again in this life, I will meet her in heaven. Tell her, and he began to weep aloud, that she was the best wife a man could have, and that I loved her with all my heart.
I will tell her, Laszlos, and I will bring you any message she may have as well.
Thank you, my brother. I am grateful you have come.
Do you know where she and the others have been taken?
We have an idea, but we dare not go looking, or we will all be rounded up. You know, our church is made up of many, many small groups that are not so small anymore. When the GC raided the main one, they took my wife and Pastor D and about 70 others, but they missed more than 90 other groups.
Wow.
That is the good news. The worst of it is that apparently some in the original group have cracked under the strain. I can tell you without question it would not have been my wife or my pastor, but someone was tortured or scared or deceived into telling of the other groups. More raids have begun, and now they dare not meet at all. It is only a miracle I was not at the meeting with my wife, but if she becomes a martyr, I wish I was there to die with her.
We came up with a question, besides a suggestion, David, and Smitty was very helpful on this, by the way, Max said. We tease him about the language, but that's a pretty shrewd brain in there. That's a compliment, Abdullah.
Well, hey, cowpoke, I know that much right now.
I guess if I can make fun of Jordan, he can make fun of Texas. Really burned me there, didn't he? Anyway, the question is this. Do we want to play this out to the end, assuming you're going to have an inside track on exactly when employees have to take the mark, or do we want some wiggle room?
David thought about it. It's more than wiggle room, Mac. It's part of the impression. If we wait till the last second and still try to make it look like we were killed, the timing alone is going to make it suspicious.
That's what I said, Abdullah said. Isn't that what I said, Mac? I said that.
That's what he said. Good point.
Okay, if we're going to do this sooner than the actual deadline, we have lots of options. Peacekeeping just started shipping its first loads of, what are they calling those contraptions now? Loyalty somethings or other?
Call them what they are, David said.
Okay, they shipped guillotines into Greece last night.
Not from here, David said. I would have known that.
No, these were actually manufactured in Istanbul and driven down. Pretty soon they'll be flying them here and there, and you know we'll be pressed into service. You ought to pick a particularly strategic place you want to see or a shipment you want to monitor, find a reason to bring Hannah and Chang, what's his name, and I'll have to requisition a quasi too.
A two? How will you justify that? We want to avoid suspicion. You can fit two pilots and three passengers in something cheaper than a 15 million Nick aircraft.
Yeah, but let's say we want to take a huge load of guillotines and skids of biochips and injectors.
I'm listening. Still need more ammo to justify a two.
Well? Let's say it was somewhere that Saint Nick himself is going to be.
Tell him who thought of that, Abdullah said.
I think you just did, Big Mouth.
Big Mouth?
Tease in, Smitty. Slow your camel down now.
David cocked his head.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Is this a game?
Abdullah said. We are, Max said. Jerusalem.
David sat, considering the possibilities. I pass the word up the line that we want to be there, bring the injection expert and my best new computer prospect. We want to carry the maximum cargo load in an impressive craft that will look good for the potentate, play to his ego.
You think he's egotistical?
Max said, as seriously as if he meant it. David smiled.
Is he joking again? Abdullah said. Not enough cloth in Jordan to make a turban for Nikolai's head.
Mac threw his head back and laughed. David was still deep in thought. And the Quasi too can be flown remotely.
Just about any plane can nowadays, but I've got lots of experience with these.
So we land somewhere out of sight on our way there. Then, from the safety of the ground, you fly that very expensive jet with all that precious cargo, except us in it, nose down right into the middle of one of the deepest bodies of water we can find.
With people watching.
Come again?
Let them see it. You wanted us to think about a logical explanation for the accident. Well, forgive the painful subject, but we recently lost our cargo chief. She would have prohibited that much weight on that particular plane, but me being a veteran, I thought it would handle it. Flying it remote and also broadcasting from it remote, I start hollering about a weight shift, cargo rolling, hard to control, mayday, goodbye, cruel world.
You guys are brilliant.
Thank you.
Both of us, Abdullah said, right?
Of course, David said.
Just thought of one more good one, Abdullah said.
Hold on now, Smitty, Max said. Is this new to me?
Slow down your pony, you'll like it.
You want to do this in front of people? Do it in Tel Aviv. Carpathia is flying through there. Do air show for him and crowds. Crash into Mediterranean so deep they know we're dead and plane is too deep to bother with search.
And where are we supposed to be during all this? Max said. It's going to be awful hard to hide in Tel Aviv with Carpathia and all his crowds.
We don't take off from Tel Aviv. We come straight from here to show, only they don't know we stopped in Jordan. I know that place. We can land where no one sees. Send plane to Tel Aviv, do show, crash.
From how far away do you think I can remotely fly that plane, Smitty?
Sort of not remote. Take off remote, but flight plan, tricks, everything programmed into computer.
Mac looked from Abdullah to David.
He may just have something there.
Really? David said. You can program the thing that specifically?
It would take some time.
Get on it.
Surprise, surprise, Abdullah said. Camel jockey come up with one.
David's cell phone rang. Readout says urgent from Hannah.
Take it, Max said.
Hey, what's up? David said. You're 100% certain this connection is secure?
Absolutely, you all right?
I'm in a utility closet. Did you know Carpathia had a peacekeeper executed today?
Actually, I did, Santiago.
Thanks for telling me. I just had to go get the body from security lockup.
There wasn't time to tell you, Hannah. Anyway, who knew you'd get assigned?
It was awful. I deal with death all the time, but he was shot between the eyes at point-blank range. And they aren't even pretending it's anything but what it was. He was executed by Carpathia himself. You know what for? Well, of course you do. You know everything.
I heard he talked too much.
Doesn't sound very technical to me, David, but that's what I heard too. Apparently he told someone something that Carpathia said in a private meeting.
I'm sorry you got in the middle of it, Hannah.
Yeah, well, I think I know who ratted him out.
You do?
Do you? She said.
Actually, I do.
David, how can you live with this stuff?
Don't think it's easy.
So who told? Who got Santiago executed?
You said you knew, Hannah.
You'll confirm it if I'm right?
Sure.
Hickman.
How'd you know?
I'm right, David?
You're right.
He was just delivered to the morgue. Someone found him in his office with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the temple.
Chapter 16. Buck and Albie joined and separated from and joined again a caravan of GC vehicles picking its way through what was left of Ptolemais.
Would you look at that, Albie said, nodding toward open trucks carrying guillotines. They're ugly, but there's not really much to them, is there?
Buck shook his head. That's one of my sidebar stories, how easily they can be assembled. They're simple machines with basic pattern-cut parts. Each is basically wood, screws, blade, spring, and rope. That's why it was so easy for the GC to send out the specs and let anybody who wanted work and had the materials to have at it. You've got huge manufacturing plants reopening to mass-produce these, competing with amateur craftsmen in their backyards.
All for something the GC says will serve as a... what did they call it officially?
Visual deterrent. They put just one at each mark application site, and everyone's supposed to fall in line.
Albie stopped where a GC peacekeeper was directing traffic. He signaled the young woman over.
I'm working here, she said testily, until she recognized the uniform. She saluted.
At your service, Commander.
We've been assigned the main detention facility, but I left a manifest in my bag. Are we close?
The main facility, sir?
I think that's what it said.
Well, they're all together about 3 clicks west. Take a left at your next intersection and follow the unpaved road around the curve until it joins the rebuilt highway again. The center will be on your right, just inside the city. Can't miss it. Massive. Surrounded by barbed wire and more of us. Better hurry, though, if you want to see the fun. They're going to do some chopping tonight if the rebels don't soil themselves and change their minds.
Yeah?
Word I get is they're lining them up and sorting them out now. The ones who go back to their cells with their heads attached will have a new tattoo tomorrow.
David was exhausted. It was nearly 2300 hours Carpathia time as he trudged from his office toward his quarters. He was stunned to hear energetic steps behind him and turned to see Viv Ivins, looking as fresh and gung-ho as she did every morning. She carried a leather portfolio and smiled brightly at David.
Evening, Director Hasid, she called out as she drew alongside.
Ma'am?
Great days, hmm?
He didn't know how long he could maintain the charade. Interesting days, anyway, he said. She stopped.
I love when things fall into place.
He thought that an unfortunate choice of words, given her personal coordination of guillotine production and distribution.
Things humming along, are they? He said.
I've persuaded top brass not to display loyalty enforcement facilitators here at the palace.
Oh?
Not the best image.
They're showing up all over the world.
And that's fine. I can live with that. In fact, I'm all for it. Outside the capital city and the headquarters in particular, you will have certain elements who need the visual aid, a reminder of the seriousness of this test of loyalty. One would have to be pathologically committed to one's cause to really decide against the mark. Seeing the consequence standing right before you as you make your decision will persuade those who merely want a little attention for stalling with their choice.
But not here.
Not necessary.
If a person was not loyal to the risen potentate, why would he or she want to work here?
What I want to see produced here are pictures, still and moving, of happy, willing, joyful loyalists. The citizenry of the global community should see rapture on the faces of those it depends upon to administer the new world order. No enforcement is needed here. We are the examples to the world of the joy of commitment, the sense of fulfillment when one takes his stand.
Follow?
Sure. And I have to say I like the idea of those ugly contraptions not dotting the landscape here.
I couldn't agree more. We start with new hires tomorrow, and there is much enthusiasm among them over being among the first to receive the potentate's mark. All are opting for his image on their foreheads. I plan to go for the simple understatement. But I have to say, Mr. Hasid, it's fun to see these kids today with their eagerness to stand out. You're interviewing a prospect tomorrow morning.
Right.
The Asian prodigy.
That's him.
What a family. His father is pleading to have his son be the first to receive the mark. It's too late for that, as we're beginning with political prisoners, but he very well could be the first GC employee.
David blanched and tried to cover. But he's not been hired yet.
It's a foregone conclusion, though, right?
Well, I need to talk with him at length, determine his suitability to take his last year of high school here, be away from his parents for the first time, see where he fits best.
But the odds of him not being hired somewhere here are minuscule. We could process him first, and he would, in essence, be pre-approved to work in any department. Sort of like a pre-approved mortgage. First you qualify, then you can make an offer on anything in your price range.
I wouldn't do that, David blurted.
Why not?
It just doesn't seem as buttoned down as we like to be. Let's let the process run its course. Do it right.
Oh, David, honestly, what would be the harm?
He shrugged. I was told the boy is scared to death of needles and is fighting the whole idea.
Even to the point where he would pass up a golden opportunity here?
He's going to have to take the mark in the United Asian States anyway, or he'll lose more than a job.
Maybe he'll get used to the idea by then.
Oh, pish-posh, Director Acide, if he's so brilliant, it's time for him to grow up. He may fight it, but it'll be over in seconds, and he'll see he made a big to-do about nothing.
Well, my meeting with him is at 0900 hours. It can wait till after that, can it? I'd hate to try to interview him after he's been through a trauma.
A trauma? I just told you about he'll still be upset.
I can't imagine them administering marks before 0900 anyway.
In his room, a few minutes later, David used his sub-notebook to double-check his secretary's schedule. She had not informed him of a time for his appointment with Chang, and a quick look at her calendar showed why. The meeting had been confirmed at the end of the day for 1400 hours, 2 o'clock. It was something she would tell him in the morning. David changed it on her calendar to 0900, then hacked into personnel's computer and did the same. He phoned 4054 and left a voice message. Chang, our interview tomorrow has been changed to 9 a.m. Please do not go to personnel or anywhere else until we've met. See you then. While he was finishing his message, his phone told him he had a call waiting. He punched in to find Ming, distraught.
It started here, she said. Has it started there?
Slow down, Ming. What started?
Application of the mark. The equipment arrived at Buffer this morning, and they're already using it tonight.
Prisoners are getting the chip?
Yes. I can't imagine it will be much longer for us staff. I need to bolt soon, but I wanted to check.
Any believers there? Anyone refusing the mark?
Not a one. They're lining up for this thing as if they've been loyal scouts forever. I think they're hoping they'll get good behavior points. Truth is, they'll still be rotting here, but with a mark on head or hand.
David told her of his conversation with Viv and what he had done about it.
Oh, no, no, she said. At 9, you must make Chang disappear. Get him out of there.
We're not prepared to leave yet, Ming.
What are you going to do?
I'll have to make up something, I guess. Some reason why he's just not ready. Maybe I'll say I found evidence of immaturity, that I just think he's too young to fit in.
You're a director, David. Make it convincing. This has to work.
I have all night to think about it.
And I have all night to pray about it.
I'll take all I can get, Ming. Listen, let me do something for you. I can get you reassigned to USNA.
You could?
Of course, I just do it through the computer and no one questions it. They see it's approved by someone higher than their level and they don't rock the boat. Where do you want to go?
There are prisons all over the states, she said. But I'm never actually going to get to one, right?
Right. We get you assigned, get you on a plane, but then lose you somehow. You run off and we can't find you. But then you're on your own. You need to get to the safe house in Chicago.
Would they have me?
Ming, Leah has told everyone about you. They can't wait to welcome you. They knew you and your brother would eventually have to wind up there. We can use you both.
Now, where shall I assign you in the States?
Somewhere close enough to Chicago so you can get to the safe house, but not so suspiciously close that people start putting two and two together.
I don't know the States, she said. There is a huge facility in Baltimore that always needs personnel.
That's a long way from Chicago.
Wait.
Can you get to Greece?
When?
As soon as possible. Even tonight.
I guess that's up to you. Make my transfer highest priority, and if you want GC here to get me to Greece, they'll have to do it. But, David, Greece is a hot spot right now, crawling with GC and making an example of political prisoners. I don't want to work or hide there.
David told her how she would get to the States from Greece, and it would appear GC was escorting her.
There is a God, she said. Where do I meet these men?
Get to the airport at Kozani. They'll find you.
Can you get Chang there, too? Please, David, do it. Get him out of my parents' quarters. Get him assigned somewhere, and have one of your pilots get him to Greece. We can go to the safe house together.
Ming, please, it has to make sense. I pull a stunt like that, your parents lose track of Chang, and it all comes back to me, not to mention you. You both are sent somewhere and then wind up lost? Think, Ming. I know you're desperate and that you care, but let me work on the logistics. The last thing I want is for the GC spotlight to turn on us.
I know, David, I understand. I'm thinking with my heart.
Nothing wrong with that, he said. Until we quit thinking at all and make things worse.
We in trouble? A Greece-based GC peacekeeping chief at the detention center asked Buck when he saw he was accompanied by a deputy commander. We do everything by the book.
This looks like a madhouse, frankly, Buck said, surveying the complex of 5 rather plain industrial buildings that had probably once been factories. The windows were covered with bars, and the perimeter was a tangle of fence and razor wire.
But the place was crowded with GC in lines, peering at printouts in the night, using flashlights to see where various prisoners were located.
"We do all we can with what we have to work with," the chief said, nervously eyeing Albie.
Buck continued to do the talking. "How many prisoners at this facility?"
"About 900.
"You've got that many GC here?"
"Well, not quite, sir."
"What are they all doing? Are they assigned?"
"Most are running the Mark Center in the middle building."
"What is in the other buildings?"
"Teenagers through early 20s in the first building, males in the west wing, females in the east."
"Individual cells?"
"Hardly. Prisoners are incarcerated in large common areas that used to be production lines."
"And in the other buildings?"
"Women in the next, none in the center, men in the last two."
"What are the majority of these people charged with?"
"Mostly felonies, some petty theft, larceny."
"Any violent criminals?" The chief nodded back over his shoulder.
"Murderers, armed robbers, and the like, right there."
"Political prisoners?"
"Mostly in the second building, but religious dissidents, at least the men, are right here, too."
He motioned to the last building again. "You've got dissidents in with violent criminals," Buck said, leaning forward as if to get a better look at the man's nameplate.
"Where they're placed is not my call, sir. I'm coordinating the loyalty mark application, and I need to be in that center building in about 5 minutes. You want to help? I've got a crew of 6 moving from building to building, starting with the west, doing preliminary sorting."
"Meaning?"
"Determining whether any plan to refuse the mark."
"And if so?"
"They are to identify themselves immediately. We're not going to waste time letting people wait until they're in line to decide whether they want to live or die."
"What if some change their minds in line?"
"Decide at the last minute they don't want the mark after all? I don't foresee that."
"But what if they do?"
"We deal with that quickly. But for the most part, we want to know in advance so we don't hold things up. Now, gentlemen, I have orders. Will you help with the culling or not?"
"Will this be going on simultaneously in all the buildings?" Buck asked, not wanting to miss the pastor or Mrs. Miklos.
"No, we're starting in the west building. Prisoners will be escorted to the center building for processing, then back before those in the next building go, and so forth."
"We'll help," Buck said. The chief shouted,
"Athenas!"
And a stocky, middle-aged peacekeeper with a 1-inch black crew cut stepped up, 3 men and 2 women in uniform behind him.
"Ready, Alex?"
"Ready, sir,"
Alex said with a high-pitched voice that didn't match his physique.
"Take Jensen and Elbaz here with you."
"I have sufficient staff, sir."
The chief lowered his head and stared at Athenas.
"They're here from USNA, and if you didn't notice, AA, Mr. Elbaz is a deputy commander."
"Yes, sir. Would Mr. Elbaz care to lead?"
Albie stuck out his lower lip and shook his head. It was 2 in the afternoon in Chicago, and the remaining Trib Force members crowded around the television. The local GC News reported that mark applications had begun at local jails and prisons. Zeke sat, rocking before the TV, his hands over his mouth. Rayford asked if Chaim's Jerusalem disguise was ready. He kept his eyes on the screen and took his hands from his mouth only long enough to say,
"All but the robe. Done by tonight."
Tzion had come up with the idea of letting Zeke change Chaim's appearance exactly as he had been planning, but also outfitting him in sandals and a thick, brown, hooded robe that extended far enough in front of his face to hide his features. The whole garment would go over his head, and the hem would settle an inch off the ground, the waist cinched with a braided rope. Everyone agreed it sounded humble and nondescript, and yet ominous enough once Chaim was seen by crowds as in charge and with something to say. Chaim was slowly accepting the idea, provided he could play-act from the shadows of his garb.
"I still say Tzion not to go."
"Let me promise you, my friend," Tzion said. "Allow God to use you mightily to get his people to safety, and I will come and address them in person sometime."
The TV anchorman announced that while the area GC had not expected to need the loyalty enforcement facilitators, one prisoner had reportedly refused to take the mark and had been executed. This occurred at what was formerly known as the DuPage County Jail, and execution of the dissident was carried out less than 90 minutes ago. The rebel, serving an indeterminate sentence for black market trafficking of fuel oil, has been identified as 54-year-old Gustav Zuckermandel, formerly of Des Plaines. Zeke buried his face in his hands and toppled onto his side, where he lay crying quietly. One by one, the rest of the force approached to merely lay a hand on him and cry with him. Tzion, Chaim, Rayford, Leah, and Chloe surrounded him, and Tzion prayed. Our Father, once again we face the wrenching loss of a loved one. Shower our young brother with hope eternal, and remind us all that we will one day see again this brave martyr. When Tzion finished, Zeke drew a sleeve across his wet face, moved to his hands and knees, and then awkwardly rose. "You all right, son?" Rayford asked.
"Got work to do is all,"
Zeke said, averting his eyes, and he shuffled back toward his room. Buck had a bad taste in his mouth. He had been in these situations before, had seen enough depravity and mayhem to last several lifetimes. But he wished he and Albie had brought high-powered automatic weapons so they could at least attempt a rescue. How, in his flesh, he wanted to spray deadly projectiles into the swarming GC. How he would have loved to have stormed the detention barracks, looking for people with the mark of Christ and ferrying them to safety. But here was an impossible situation. Prophecy was once again coming to life before his eyes, and he would not be able to turn away. At the West Building, the 8 members of the culling team were checked in past the outer fence, and then again at the main entrance. Buck was assaulted by the stench as soon as they had cleared the main corridor. Inside a huge cage milled more than 100 male teenagers, some looking tough, others petrified. The cage was surrounded with 4 to 5 guards on a side, weapons in hand, smoking, reading magazines, and looking bored. The teenagers jumped and cheered and applauded when the team entered. "Freedom!" one shouted, while the rest laughed. "They've come to free us!" And others jeered and mocked. Athena stepped away from the others and put up both hands for quiet. Buck sidled to a guard who dropped his magazine and straightened up.
"Sir?" he said.
"What's the smell, soldier?"
"The can, sir. In the corner, see?"
Buck looked to the 4 corners of the cage where 55-gallon drums stood. Each had a makeshift wooden set of steps next to it and was covered by an ill-fitting toilet seat. "This building has no facilities?"
"Only for us," the guard said, "just down that hall."
Buck shook his head. "They can't be led there periodically?"
"Not enough of us to risk that."
Alex Athenas had finally commanded the prisoner's attention.
"You are privileged to be among the first to display your loyalty and devotion to His Excellency, the risen potentate of the global community, Nikolai Carpathia."
To Buck's amazement, this was met with enthusiastic cheering and applause that went on for almost a minute. Some teens broke into chants and songs lauding Carpathia. Athenas finally quieted them again.
"In a few moments you will be led to the central building where you will tell the staff whether you want your loyalty mark on your forehead or your right hand. The area you choose will then be disinfected with an alcohol solution. When it is your turn, you will enter a cubicle where you will sit and be injected with a biochip while simultaneously tattooed with the prefix 216, which identifies you as a citizen of the United Carpathian States. The application takes just seconds. The disinfectant also contains a local anesthetic, and you should experience no discomfort. Any acts of disorderly conduct will be met with immediate justice. For you illiterates, that means you will be dead before you hit the floor."
This was met with more hooting and hollering, but Buck found himself staring at a boy in the middle of the crowd. He had black, curly hair, was thin and pasty, and wore tilting glasses that appeared to have one lens missing. The boy looked barely old enough to be in this crowd, but what caught Buck's eye was the shadow on his forehead. Or was it a smudge? Or was it the seal of God? "Excuse me, officer," Buck said, striding past Athenas and peering into the cage. The hooting stopped and the prisoners stared. "You there." "Yes, you. Step forward." The young man made his way through the crowd to the front of the cage where he stood quaking. "Someone open this door," Buck barked. No one moved. He whirled to look at the guard he had spoken to, who shuffled nervously and looked at Athenas.
"The rest of you back off,"
Athenas said, and he nodded to the guard who unlocked the cage. Buck marched in and grabbed the boy by the arm, his ratty gray sweater bunching under Buck's fingers. He dragged him out of the cage, past Athenas and the other guards, scolding him the whole way. "You mock global community peacekeepers, young man? You'll learn respect."
"No, sir, please, I
shut up and keep moving." Buck dragged him past the guards at the entrance, who called after him.
"Wait, who is that? We have to process him out."
"Later," Buck said.
Where are we going?
The boy pleaded with a Greek accent. Home, Buck whispered.
But my parents are here.
Give me their names, Buck said, and he wrote them down. I can't guarantee they'll get out, but you're not going to die tonight.
You're a believer?
Buck nodded and shushed him. They blew past the guards at the outer gate, and Buck marched him to the GC Jeep across the road. Past the lights and into the shadows, few heads had even turned to watch. Front passenger side, Buck said. Any other believers in the cage? The boy shook his head.
Never saw anyone.
Give me the name of one of the guys in the cage. Just one.
Who?
Anyone, just give me a name.
Paolo Gunter.
Got it. Now listen, you are to sit here, right here in this jeep, until I get back. What you must not do, are you listening, is make sure that no one is watching. Because if you discover that, you might be tempted to make a run for it and not stop until you are somewhere safe. Then I would get back out here later and wonder whatever happened to my prisoner. Understand?
I think so. You don't want me to do this?
Of course not. I don't know what I'd do about an escapee, do you? The boy managed a weak smile. You know what? Buck said. I don't think anybody's watching now. Feeling like Anis, the mysterious border guard who had discovered Sion under the seat of the bus so long ago, Buck put one hand on the boy's shoulder and another on his head, and he said, "And now may the Lord bless you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you peace. Godspeed, son." Buck trotted back to the gate, and when he glanced over his shoulder, the boy was gone. The gate guards let Buck through, and the ones at the building asked, "Who was that?" "Ganter, Paolo," he said. "Transferred custody to the United North American States." They were flipping through their printouts as he hurried back in. Alex Athenas was finishing.
"Are there any here who will be choosing to reject the loyalty mark?"
The group laughed and waved derisively at him.
"None then? No one? Anyone?"
The prisoners looked at each other and quieted. Buck waited and watched to see if the boy had been wrong and there were any other believers who might take a stand.
"What if we say no?"
a tough called out, smirking.
"You'll know the consequences,"
Alex said. The boy drew a finger across his neck.
"That's right," Alex added. "Any questions?"
"No rebels here," someone shouted. "All loyal, upstanding citizens."
"That's what we like to hear. No questions?"
"Do we get to choose what image we want?"
"No. Because of your circumstances, you are allowed only the basic chip and number tattoo."
The prisoners groused loudly, and Athena signaled to his team and the other armed guards to get into position.
"This will be done in an orderly fashion," he said, "or you will wish you had opted to reject the mark."
Chapter 17. Rayford stopped to check in on Zeke, whom he found busy on Chaim's robe. Zeke said,
"Got enough material. Thinking about making him too."
"You heard what Sion said about clothes and the safe haven?" Zeke nodded.
"He might want variety, though. And I didn't hear Sion say whether the clothes get dirty."
Rayford shrugged. "I admired your dad, Zeke, you know that?" Zeke nodded, still working. "He was courageous, right to the end."
"Didn't surprise me," Zeke said. "I told you he'd do that, didn't I?"
"You had him pegged. I pray we'll all show that kind of courage." Zeke looked up and shook his head, his eyes distant.
"I wish he hadn't got caught. Bad timing. He could have done a lot more for the believers, like I'm gonna do."
"I admire you too, Zeke. We all do." Zeke nodded again. "Don't forget to mourn and grieve too, you know. There's nothing wrong with that."
"I can't help it. I miss him already."
"I'm just saying, don't pretend. You don't have to look strong to us. We've all suffered terrible losses, and even if the Lord helps us through it, we don't have to like it. The Bible doesn't say we're not to mourn. It just says we're not to mourn the way people do who have no hope. Mourn with all your might, Zeke, because we do have hope. We know we're going to see our loved ones again." Zeke suddenly stood and thrust out his hand. Rayford shook it.
"I don't suppose I dare go try to get his body."
Rayford shook his head. "The first thing they're going to want is to know your connection, and you know the second thing.
Whether I want the mark."
"We're crippled with the loss of your dad, Zeke. I don't know what we'd do if we lost you, too."
"I just hate to think what they're gonna do with him. I try not to think about You know, his head being, you know.
I know. But no matter what they do with your dad's body, God knows. He has his eye on your father. His soul is in heaven now, and his body will eventually be there too, new and improved. If God can resurrect a cremated body, you know what that means.
Burned up, yeah.
Then he can resurrect anybody. Remember, he created us from the dust of the earth.
Thanks, Captain Steele. Bad as this is, there's no other place I'd rather have been when I heard about it. I sure love all you guys.
And we love you, Zeke. Rayford walked out and shut the door, noticing Tzion just out of sight of the doorway, leaning against the wall, arms folded.
Excuse me, Dr. Benjuda said. I didn't intend to listen in. I didn't know you were there. You must have had the same idea I did.
It's all right.
I'm glad I heard that, Rayford. God has restored you to leadership. You did just what I know the Lord would have wanted you to do, and you did it well.
Thanks, Tzion. God's been more patient with me than I deserve. Isn't that true with all of us? They walked back toward the commons.
I spoke with Chloe a few moments ago, Tzion said. I hope I wasn't out of line.
You can't be out of line, Doc. You know that. What was it about?
I was just checking to see how she was doing with the assignment you gave her. I have a vested interest, you know.
In the call for planes and pilots, I should say you do. So save me a conversation. How's it going?
She was amused and eager to tell me, actually. She put out the request for brave commodity co-op members willing to lend their planes and cars and fuel and time to the cause of Messiah in Jerusalem, and she told them it would be soon. She reports that the response has been overwhelming. The element of danger must make these men and women rally. She says they are more willing to throw caution to the wind for this scheme than they are to make the routine flights that keep the co-op running.
Around the corner, Kenny Bruce came, chugging, chased by Leah. He appeared lost in the fantasy that he had to elude her, though he loved her hugs and tickles.
"Grandpa!" he squealed, reaching for Rayford.
But at the last instant, he changed course, leaping into the rabbi's arms.
"Uncle Zone!"
Leah laughed and grabbed for him. "That old man can't save you," she said, and he buried his head in Tzion's chest.
"Old man," Tzion said. "Miss Leah, you have wounded me."
Tzion carried Kenny back to his mother, and Leah lingered.
"Rayford, I feel useful here, helping Chloe, who is incredible, by the way. That girl could run any size corporation. And I love helping with that precious child."
"But?"
"You know what's coming."
He nodded. "I'm still finalizing assignments," he said. "But yours includes getting out of here a while."
"Oh, thank you, Ray. I don't want to be selfish, and I know Chloe is as antsy as I am."
"She has responsibilities here, more than you do."
"It doesn't seem fair to her."
"But she takes her role seriously, and I think she's resigned to it."
"Well," Leah said, "I can't speak for her, but I would feel trapped."
"Trapped by motherhood?" Leah smiled,
spoken like a man. "As someone who has been there, let me tell you, at times you need a break. It doesn't have to be long, and you can't wait to get back. But, well, it's not my business. But if you find a place for her outside, even a short assignment, I'll be happy to spell her."
"You can do what she does, both the co-op and looking after the baby?"
"Sure, it's only the men around here who are incapable of that."
Rayford shot her a double take.
"I'm kidding, Ray. But tell me, am I going to get to go to Israel?"
"You want to be there?"
"I was stuck in Belgium last time. All the good stuff happens in Jerusalem."
"The dangerous stuff."
"And your point?"
He cocked his head. "Oh, yeah. You live for that stuff."
"I live to serve, Ray. I'm not bragging. It's what I do. It was even before I became a believer. I want to be valuable to the cause. I'm not even suspicious. No one's out trying to hunt me down. And with that wacky dental appliance in, and if I let Zeke touch up the hair, I'm invisible."
"It would take more than that to make you Middle Eastern."
"Maybe this David character can make me GC then. Give me a reason to be over there."
Rayford raised his eyebrows.
"Maybe," he said.
"You never know." Buck and Albie stood with the culling squad in the female teens area. Buck found it hard to believe the conditions were the same as for the men. There were two women guards, but the rest were men. The girls were not as noisy and raucous as the boys, but the makeup of the group was similar. There were tough girls and apparent victims, but all were curious. Buck scoured the group, and a tall brunette stared back at him. He was convinced they had seen each other's mark at the same time. Her eyes grew wide, and he tried to communicate with his that she must not give him away. As Alex Athenas ran through his explanation, Buck casually moved close to Albie.
"I'd better not push my luck. Think you can get one out of here?"
"Maybe," Albie said. "You're not thinking of trying this in every building, are you?"
"I hate doing nothing."
"Me too, but we're going to get ourselves killed. And what about when there's a bunch of them?"
"I can worry about them only one at a time."
Albie sighed.
"Where is she?"
Buck pointed her out.
"Watch and learn, buddy boy," Albie said.
Albie rushed the cage, shouting. Alex fell silent and watched with everyone else as Albie prowled up and back before the wire mesh, eyes on his prey.
"You! You from the North American States?"
The girl froze, her eyes darting at Buck, who nodded slightly, and back at Albie.
"No," she said, her voice a constricted squeak. "Don't lie to me, dirtball. I'd know you anywhere."
Albie whirled in a rage that almost convinced Buck.
"Alex, get somebody to open this cage."
He turned back, pointing at the girl.
"Step to the door, now, hands behind your head."
She advanced, stiff-legged and shuddering, as the gate was